everybody. Welcome to the Unscripted Wrestling Podcast here on the Everything Unscripted Podcast Network. I am tonight's host, Doug Hummer. And I am joined here by my brother, Daniel.
What's up?
Eric is here.
What's up?
All right, Stevie's with us.
What's up?
One of our special guests, Joel Deaton, is here.
All right.
And 111, who just joined us?
This would be Lucky P. Larson Esquire out of West Tennessee.
Lucky, welcome to the Unscripted Wrestling Podcast.
Your pleasure.
Thank you very much. All right, tonight's episode is on Southern Territories. Now, for those of you that are younger listeners that aren't aware of what the territories are, the territories were basically different wrestling territories in, back in the, 60s, 70s, and early 80s. And, of course, we are going to have quite the panel here talking about the territories of the South. So we're talking Tennessee, Florida, basically Memphis, Championship Wrestling from Florida, Mid-South, which was Oklahoma and, Louisiana. We'll talk, World Class in Dallas, Houston Wrestling, basically any, Georgia Championship Wrestling, Crockett, anything that wasn't basically like AWA or WWF at the time.
Yeah.
Okay. So getting us started, Joel, I'm going to throw it to you first. Which territory did you start in and when?
Which territory did I start in?
Yes.
Well, Lars Anderson was my trainer, he had a studio in Smyrna, Georgia, just outside of Atlanta, and his wrestling group was called World League Wrestling, and so Lars trained me, and we went on some tours down in the West Indies, the Virgin Islands, Barbados, Trinidad. And he ran shows around in Georgia, but I didn't. After I worked for Lars for a little while there, about a year or so in Georgia, I went to Puerto Rico.
Okay. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, stayed over in Puerto Rico about 5 or 6 months, then came back into Georgia and did some work for Ole. Georgia Championship.
Right. And around what year was that?
What year was what?
That you were in Ole's Georgia Championship Wrestling.
That was in 79.
Okay.
Right. Yeah. And then, like I said, we went to Puerto Rico for a little while. Then we went to Southwest Texas Championship Wrestling out in San Antonio for Joe Blanchard was the owner, and the booker was Wahoo.
Okay. All right. Lucky, I'm going to bring you in real quick. When did you get started in wrestling?
I got trained in 78.
Lucky, when did you get started in wrestling?
Well, as a fan about 40 years ago, on the other side of the curtain about 5. And so I'm here for the current territories. And, of course, I worked for Bert Prentice for USA Championship Wrestling, which is alive and well and running weekly shows even in the midst of today's madness. In the Tennessee territory, and while everyone is falling over themselves to commend the return to studio wrestling on television, Bert Prentice has been doing it for the last several years because I'm the color commentator, so I know for a fact he's been doing it.
Right. Now, one of the territories I wanted to talk talk about, obviously, is Georgia Championship Wrestling. Joel, you were there. Talk about Ole Anderson as Booker of the Territory.
Well, I didn't get to really know Ole real good because we weren't in there that long. But, you know, he used us at the time. Of course, we were young and great. He used us underneath. But he, you know, he kept us employed, and then we got booked out of Georgia Championship out, you know, like I said, out to San Antonio for Southwest Texas Championship Wrestling. But Georgia was, you know, they had the regular. It was a great territory, and Ole had it thriving, and you know, it drew a lot. They drew a lot of money in Georgia week after week after week, and. And I was, you know, also worked down in Florida. I worked for Eddie Graham and Championship Wrestling for Florida. I worked a little bit for the Fullers in Continental. Worked some out for Bill Watts in the Mid-South. Worked up for Leroy McWork out of Tulsa before Bill came in there and bought it out. I don't know. I just had and I worked for the Crockett's under Dusty for 6 years. So, and then I worked for Baba in Japan for another 10 years. So, you know, just whatever era, starting from the late 70s all the way up through when I retired, you know, full time, I stayed pretty busy.
Right. Oh, that's good. Now, Lucky, you were talking about the current territories. Now, like, the territories aren't necessarily, like, a thing now. Like, you know, the territories, you know, people say died, like, a long ago. Talk about the return of the studio wrestling and how important it is now in today's day and age.
Well, I think it's extremely important. You know, obviously, the stars of tomorrow have to be wrestling somewhere today. And right. The independent stars today, people you're going to see main event WrestleMania 50. You know, they're not, every single person does not come like Ronda Rousey and get in, you know, put into the main event immediately. They got to learn the craft somewhere. And so that's what Bert Prentice does in training people. And we have shows throughout Tennessee. And it's not just the independent talent. In the 5 years I've done this, I've been hit by Jim Cornette's bracket. I've been hit by Jimmy Hart's megaphone. I've been hit with a steel chair by Rikishi. I've been low-blowed by Brian Christopher several times. Rest in peace, my friend. I've been beaten up by the Rock and Roll Express, by Rob Conway, Coco Beware, Moose, Brian Pillman Jr. I've managed Lanny Poffo. I've managed Carlito. I've managed Doug Gilbert. I've managed Tommy Rich. I've managed Katie Lee. Heavy sigh. I've worked with Missy Hyatt. I've worked against Shane Douglas and Baby Doll and Tommy Dreamer, Shane Strickland. So, and this is for a small independent company. This is the contacts I've made, and this is, you know, who comes through our territory. And that's just off the top of my head. I forgot Tony Atlas has been there, and Jimmy Valiant has been there. You know, I've been to a lot of places. In fact, Joel, you probably don't remember this, but I met you at the Gathering last year, and I'm actually my shoot job is as an attorney, and I'm actually the one to talk to you after the Gathering for a while.
Oh, okay. Well, cool. Yeah, I remember. You know, that was in August of was it 19?
And you know,
I worked that battle royal they had there, and then when I came home, you know what? But two months later, that I had my stroke.
I remember, and you know that was I managed in the main event of that show where Bam Bam Bundy and Kevin Zion, the Legion of Lucky, came down there and took on, with Missy Hyatt in our corner, took on Tommy Dreamer and Shane Douglas with Baby Doll in their corner. And you talk about the continuity of our show and what we're bringing today. On Saturday, February 6th, at the Omen Arena in Jackson, we've got Jake the Snake Roberts. We've got Jerry Lawler, who is a mainstay in our company, even though I've done my absolute best to get rid of him. He's still there. Finds a way to get by every single time. Even when I brought in the boogeyman, he turned the boogeyman on me and I ended up getting wormed. I tell you. But nonetheless, you know, he's going to be there. Jake Roberts is going to be there. Half of Demolition is going to be there. Mike Rotunda is going to be there. Brooke Hogan's going to be there. We just hosted Jerry Lawler's 50th anniversary show this past September, where we had Lawler, Arn Anderson, Barry Windham, Lex Luger. We had the Rock and Roll Express. We had Jimmy Hart, who's there a lot for us. We had Jim Ross was there. We had Kane there. I mean, I'm telling you, USA Championship Wrestling is where independent wrestling stars are born and where the talent is. If you don't want to go to WWE, who's not touring right now, you can come see USA Championship Wrestling. We got a show in Gladeville, Tennessee tonight, Dixon, Tennessee tomorrow. We're back in Jackson next weekend. You can see it on USA Championship Wrestling on Facebook. You can see the Legion of Lucky, my fan club. You can see Lucky P. Larson Esquire on Facebook. You can go to the YouTube channel for the Legion of Lucky. We're all over the place. People say that independent wrestling is dead. People are wrong.
Right.
Well, you know, that's real good to hear, man, because that's what the young guys need more than anything, is to go out to that ring every night or as much as they can to get that valuable experience that will take them on down the road.
Yeah, we have one star who has been with USA Championship Wrestling primarily as his home base for the last couple of years, and he's exploded onto the independent scene, and he made his Impact debut just last week by the name of Blake Christian. So, and, you know, USA Championship Wrestling was his home, and he's going to be wrestling for us tonight. So I'm telling you, you know, we are the place to go if you want to see good, talented wrestling, and, of course, the greatest professional wrestling manager in independent professional wrestling today, Lucky P. Larson.
All right. Awesome. All right. Rod Price, are you here?
I am here.
All right. Rod, it's great to have you on the show again.
Thank you, man. I appreciate it.
No problem. All right. We're talking about the
RP.
What are you doing, man? How you feeling, Joe?
Hey, Rod, man, I'm hanging in there, brother. You know, it's a hard road every day, but I'm still hitting it, man. I ain't give up yet.
I told you before, you're a warrior, man. You fight every day, so keep battling, brother. I got you in my prayers, praying for you, brother. I love you, man.
I love you too, Rod. It's so good to get to talk to you tonight.
Yes, looking forward to this, man.
This is definitely going to be a fun discussion. Rod, what year did you break into the business?
I started messing around with independence while I was in San Bernardino. I kind of went to school, learned wrestling, and it was around, I mean, to really got serious was 1988.
Okay, so that's kind of around like the end of like the original run of the territories, but
that's exactly right. I got in like I think World Class was still smoking by the terms of you know it had faded, and I think USWA or Renegade Wrestling, whatever they called it at the time, was coming in with Lawler and Jarrett.
Right. And so were you part of you were part of that USWA Dallas thing then, right?
Yeah, when I came, they had already, you know, I was working for doing some house shows for Fritz, and mainly for Kevin, and Fritz would be at, you know, be at a lot of them. Kevin and Kerry, but when I came in, I got in, I was working down the street at Longhorn Ballroom on a Tuesday night, and I want to say it was Reggie B. Fine that I met that night and said, man, I'll see if you can get you in, and he got me in, so I'm thankful for Reggie B. Fine.
Awesome. So you spent the time in USWA Dallas, and then it became global in 1991, right?
Right. When it first started up, I think I was still in Puerto Rico. I think I was in Puerto Rico with Akbar. But he was telling me that he was on the horn to somebody saying that, you know, Pedicino was going to open up global wrestling. So when I got back, I was working for Kendo, and I was going to Japan. And it took about a month when I left Puerto Rico to go home to get into global wrestling.
Okay. Now, and this is another thing that I wanted to explain also to the younger listeners. The thing about the territories is, especially back in the day before the advent of national cable television, whatever area you lived in, that is the television, that is the wrestling program that you got. So, like, if you lived in, you got World Class. If you lived in Florida, you got Championship Wrestling from Florida.
I will say this: I grew up in Boston, and we got pretty much everything. We got World Class from Texas. We got Memphis Championship Wrestling. I remember watching Global, the AWA on ESPN. We were fortunate up in Boston. So I even saw that old man Bill Dundee, who I've had a couple run-ins, and I'm waiting for him to come on so I can give him a happy greeting.
Yeah, I mean, he should. As far as I know, he is supposed to call in. That's what I was told.
Unless he's afraid of having to deal with me again, because you know, I've been having my way with him for the last several years. So
I don't know, and I'm. If he calls in to you, go at it. I'm just letting you go. I'm not refereeing this thing. So certain areas were lucky. I know growing up myself, we kind of got lucky. Well, because that was around the time I was born in 86. So, like, that was a time where everything was going on ESPN and all that. And I remember also getting – at some point on some local station, we got the Memphis wrestling. We got USWA. So I was able to keep up almost, even though I was real little at the time, I was still able to keep up on most of the wrestling going on. So I'm going to throw it back to you because I want to talk a little bit more about Georgia. You know, you say you didn't get to really know Ole that long. Were you there when Georgia Championship, or the Briscoes sold their stock of Georgia Championship Wrestling to Vince McMahon?
Whoa, who are you talking to? Me, Joel?
Yeah.
Joel.
No, I wasn't in there when they did that. I worked for Ole. I guess, you know, we didn't stay in there real long for Ole, just a couple of 2 or 3 months before we went on out to Texas, you know, in San Antonio for Blanchard, but Wahoo under Wahoo. When I went back in 83 and started working for Crockett up in Charlotte, you know, that's when they had a committee of bookers, but Dusty ended up getting the whole thing, and Dusty brought me in there in 83, and I stayed till 87 when I got my first tour to Japan, and then worked over there 10 years. But, Rod, were you out there in Global when me and Billy stopped in out there in 91 for a few shots?
Yes.
Yeah, I was pretty sure you were. I wish we could have stayed a little longer. We did those TVs in the Sportatorium out there, right?
Yes.
Okay, well, they, you know, I wish Global could have stayed above water, man. They had, you know, they had some good stuff going.
Yeah, I mean, it was loaded with talent, and you know, as we've seen it in the territories, you know, Vince sucks them up, kills the territories.
Yeah,
Go ahead. I was going to say, wasn't Doug Gilbert one of the main stars of Global?
Well, Doug was in there for
right, the Dark Patriot. Because I've both managed him. In fact, I managed him to the USA Heavyweight title a couple of years ago, and he then turned on me and decked me with his baseball bat. So I've some of the stars from back then are still just as active and successful today.
That's right.
That's definitely awesome to hear. Now, kind of getting back to Global a little bit, I kind of want to touch on that because that Global obviously is another one. You can technically consider that a territory because they stayed in Dallas, or they stayed in the Dallas area. And Rod, we kind of touched on this when we did the Global Wrestling Federation episode last July. They basically, the only reason why, or one of the main reasons why they didn't last is just because, unfortunately, the money just wasn't, like, there wasn't a lot of money, right?
Right. I mean, it was, you're working, sometimes, you know, we do 3 or 4 matches a night, you know, for
right.
Global. And then when you start breaking it down, when you break it down, it really got down to peanuts what you were working for. Especially, you know, if you want to get really mad, you can think about how much money Max Andrews was making off the syndication and commercials. So,
right. All right. 901 area code. Who's this?
Bill Superstar Dundee.
Mr. Dundee, welcome to the Unscripted Wrestling Podcast. Pleasure to have you on.
Okay, thank you.
Oh, good. Hi, Bill.
Hey, how y'all doing?
Just fantastic, Superstar. I was only saying wonderful things about you before you got on.
Oh, yeah, they've been saying that to me my whole life. When I'm not there, they keep telling me how great I am. They're talking about me.
All right, Mr. Dundee, we're talking about southern territories, and of course, obviously, you're a huge mainstay in Memphis for so many years, but also, I believe it was around 83, 84 that you and several others were part of a talent trade that went over to Mid-South.
Well, kind of, that's what it was, they said it was anyway. Yeah.
So you went along with the Rock and Roll Express and the Midnights, correct?
Yeah. Somebody
and,
had to show them how to do it. Bill Watts, wouldn't you know what to do with them little guys?
Right, you took the book in Mid-South, correct?
The what?
You took the book in Mid-South, correct?
Yeah. Best 2 years he had when I took it. Up until that time. But when you have the Midnight Express and the Rock and Roll Express, it's hard to beat that on the card. You know what I mean?
Right. Definitely. I mean, they did big business everywhere they went.
Right. Well, the good work, and they were all good-looking buddies. So, I mean, the girls liked Ricky and Robert, and everybody liked Dennis and Bobby. So, and Cornette was a prick, so he got over as a heel manager. So,
right.
If only there were prick heel managers today, right, Bill?
Do what?
If only there were some prick heel managers out there today.
Yeah, well. Everything. It's all that. I don't know what the boys think about the day. I haven't got a clue. I mean, it was real to me. And whatever, if you was a bad guy, that's what you was. You was the bad guy. But I have no clue how they do it today.
What about that guy? What about that guy in Jackson that carries the briefcase to the ring?
The manager?
Yeah, that would be me.
Oh, okay. I'm talking to you. All right.
All right. For anybody that's just tuning into the show right now, of course, the Unscripted Wrestling Podcast. We're talking Southern Territories. We've got with us Joel Deaton, Rugged Rod Price is here, Lucky P. Larson Esquire, and of course the superstar Bill Dundee, all talking Southern Territories with us. Now, here's a question that I want to kind of throw to all of you, and I'll actually start with you first, Joel. Which territory do you think, even though all of them did eventually go under, which territory do you think, WWF first started the national expansion, which territory did you think had the best chance of going head-to-head with Vince?
Couldn't go head-to-head with Vince. They didn't have enough money. And then everybody wanted to go work for Vince. See, if all the boys hadn't been so fucking stupid, we could have kept the territories going. But no, they all had to go run and work for Vince McMahon, and they just bled the territories dry. It was nobody's fault,
but the boys had went away. Hey, Bill, how you doing, man? It's Joel Deaton. I haven't talked to you in a long time. I was just going to say that, you know, if anybody had a chance, Crockett did.
Right.
Well, we know what his problem was, but that's another story.
Yeah. If he would have stuck to his territory.
Yeah, well, Big Dust wanted to run the world, so Jimmy listened to him, but like I said, that's another story.
Right. Now, Rod, let me ask you this. When you were in the USWA, did you have many matches with Mr. Dundee here?
I sure did. Bill, I just want to say hello to you. It's been many years since I talked to you, man, but I hope you're
doing
well.
Brother, how are you doing?
I'm doing fantastic. Just fantastic.
Well, good.
I saw pictures of you. You still look like an athlete, man.
Well, I try.
You look good, brother. But yes, I did. Bill was kind enough to show me the way, too. So he can throw me and tag me, too. He showed me the way.
Well, you want to learn, and that's half the battle when your student wants to be there and not think they know everything, and you always listen. And that's how you learn anything. You got to listen.
Right.
You have to. That's one thing they don't do nowadays either.
No. Not that I go around my many young guys today, but so I really don't know what they do.
Yeah, I tried, but Bill, they already know it, so it's hard to teach
them
when they already know.
Right.
Right. Definitely. Now, getting back to let's talk a little bit more about Mid-South, Bill, and I'm going to bring you in because you obviously were the booker. Were you responsible for Hacksaw Jim Duggan coming in, or was he already there when you got there?
He was there when I took over. He was there.
Talk a little bit about the feud, because I know, and I know from watching episodes of Mid-South on the WWE Network, which that's definitely something to check out if anybody has a chance to. The feud between Duggan and DiBiase and the business it did for the territory at the time.
Well, I mean, it just seemed like a natural thing to do. That Duggan been there a while, DiBiase been there a while, and they both thought they were king of the hill. Well, just put them together and let them fight better than the people make whoever they want to be king of the hill. You know what I mean?
Right. Exactly.
This business ain't hard. I mean, they go on like it's fucking science. It ain't hard. Good versus evil. Get the baby face over, and he gets over with the people. You can do anything you want to him.
Right.
So I don't know what they do today. I went up and talked to Vince 20 years ago. Well, obviously, I couldn't said no. It's the wrong story why I'm not there. But anyway. So, big guy
yeah,
called Undertaker, didn't like me.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know one time, I remember Jim Cornette saying one time that this ain't surgery. Like, and so, and like you guys are saying, you know, it's not hard. I mean, anybody that's willing to be taught can be taught.
Right.
So.
Well, you still have to have it in your head what it's about. Here is the thing. We know it's a work. They all know it's a work today. But if you go into that ring believing it's real and do it, stuff that the people believe, it ain't hard. If somebody hits you with a fucking baseball bat, sell it and the people will believe it. But if you just take a bump and jump right up and kick his ass, they ain't believing it.
I'll say this. Bill Dundee has said in our locker room when he comes in there and holds court, he has said, if you don't believe it yourself in the ring, nobody's going to believe it in the stands either.
Right.
Right. Definitely. Now, Bill, another angle I wanted to ask you about is a Memphis angle. It was the feud between Hot Stuff Eddie Gilbert and Jerry the King Lawler. And when Eddie and Doug orchestrated Lawler getting hit with the car.
Yeah.
Now, is it true that like people in the audience were actually calling the cops?
Yeah, I mean he went too fucking fast. Kid didn't know what he was doing. We'd done that angle two or three times with different people in Tennessee. And Eddie went too fucking fast. Damn near killed Lawler.
Jesus. Yeah, because then didn't Lawler have to come on, like, TV and say, you know, it's just, I'm fine, I'm not dead, you know, everything's good?
Yeah, they called ambulances and all kinds of things. And Jerry Jarrett went out and told him, get on your feet, Lawler, and walk back into this damn studio. Lawler was going to sell it, right? He's going to lay there, but Jarrett wouldn't let him. TV station was up at uproar, so we kind of had to smarten them up.
Right. Now, like, Rod, I'm going to bring you real quick. Now, when you work for Jarrett, how was Jerry Jarrett like to you?
Jerry treated me fair. I mean, I was young coming in and needed the experience, so I got more out of the experience than I got paid, but in the long run I got paid more. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, well that's how we all started. I mean, I'd started like that in Australia when Mark Loon, King Curtis and all them big bastards was in Australia and I was doing jobs for them. We got $15 a night.
Right.
But 40 years later, I was booking Memphis, Tennessee and Louisiana and one of the big shots in the wrestling business for a while. So I learned what they were teaching.
Yes.
Right.
And that's what you have to do.
Right. Now, Lucky, I'm going to bring you back in here. Now, you said that you managed Doug Gilbert, you've managed Tommy Rich.
A number of times.
All right, and those are two guys that are two guys, obviously, that are famous in this area. Now, in your opinion, can they still go like they were able to go 25, 30 years ago?
I'm telling you, when you step through those ropes, it's like dipping yourself into a fountain of youth. These, you know, they go in there, the adrenaline hits, the crowd is roaring, And to them, it's 20 years ago. Now, are you going to see them do Hurricanranas and 450s off the top rope and then a Canadian destroyer? Probably not. But you don't need to do every high spot to tell a good story and tell a good match. These people get heat. They know what they're doing. They can lead a match. They can call a match. They can bring the crowd into it. They're good workers. So, yeah, I mean, when at the end of the day, if you're trying to get the crowd to suspend their disbelief and to buy into a match and to hate the heel and get behind the face, which is the goal of this whole crazy business, then, yes, every one of them can still go.
Yeah, I'll drink to that. But here's I don't mean this bad, but 20 years ago, you couldn't have done a fucking show like this. Somebody would have shot you, because all this is doing is exposing the business. And if you don't mind getting out here and doing that, then that's one thing. The man right there just talking exposed the fucking business. But what can you do? It's what it is today.
You had said yourself, you know, earlier, if you get hit by something, you get hit by a bat and then you jump up and you beat somebody up for 20 minutes, then the bat shot doesn't mean anything. That's the problem. And, you know, I've said it for a while. When you get these people doing, you know, three Canadian destroyers off the top rope and then a 450 and then you hit them with a package pile driver onto a set of chairs and they kick out at 1.5, it's hard to buy into it.
Right, but you know whose fault that is? The people running the wrestling business. You wouldn't have done that with Jerry Jarrett when I came here in 1975.
Well, how many moves, if you think about it, you look at finishing moves from back then. You know, Jake Roberts, DDT, Chris Adams, super kick. Now, everybody and their mother does a DDT and 17 super kicks as a spotter.
Right.
And people, you know.
But you know whose fault that is? The promoters and the other boys.
All right, well, staying on the topic of, like, the finishing moves here for a second. Rod, what was your finishing move?
I used the power slam for a long time.
That's another example of a move that, like, you see guys hit power, and I happen to be a huge fan of the power slam. I think it's an awesome move. But like, you guys hit that all the time. I don't think anybody's ever been pinned by a – I don't think anybody's been pinned by a power slam in, like, 10 years since I've seen it.
Well, with the exception of Braun Strowman's running power slam when they were building up to be a monster, but that's an exception.
Yeah. Joel, what was your finishing move?
For the most part, on my back, looking up at the lights.
Yeah, I was just about to say that. But anyway, that's funny.
But really, you know, over here in the States, I would normally use the bulldog. But in Japan, I did a splash off the top.
Splash off the top. A superstar, what was your finisher?
Just whatever I wanted to be. I didn't have one. I did every night. I just whatever I thought of in the middle of the match, and then we're going fucking home. So whatever it was, 1, 2, 3, and it was over. So.
That made it so much easier, didn't it, Bill?
The what, mate?
I said that made things so much easier.
Yeah. There only has to be one guy in there with brains. Everybody can't call in the match.
Right.
And usually it was the heel in the good old days because he was taking all the bumps, so he would tell you when he wanted. So here we are exposing the business again, but that's all right.
That's okay. I mean, we're fine with it. Just as long as we're fine with it, because it's our
show. I'm not talking about you people being fine with it. I'm talking about the people that is listening and will wonder why we don't draw no more.
Yeah. I don't know if this is on Vince McMahon's plate.
I think we're good. If it is, I'm in a lot of trouble for stuff I've said about him in the past. But one of the other things I wanted to talk about, like as far as the territories go, like when or is there anybody else you can think of, like from the territory days, like when the WWF went national and Hogan became their guy? If Hogan had decided, no, I don't want to, you know, I don't want to, you know, do this or whatever. If Vince couldn't get Hogan, who do you guys could have been that other could have been the guy besides Hogan?
Well, I got Hacksaw when I booked Louisiana. I got Duggan over as good as Hogan in Louisiana. It just depends on who's pushing the guy or what you're doing with him.
Right.
Hogan, big guy, we muscled it. You know, got him up. It's easier. Little bitty fellas like me, you got to work your ass off to get over. But it can be done, because for 40 years I've done it.
Right. Rod, let me ask you, because you did get to spend a little bit of time with him. Do you think that, like, if Kerry Von Erich had decided to go over to Vince in 84, do you think he could have gotten over as big as Hogan did?
I believe he could. I just, you know.
But
Kerry
had other problems, and we all know what that was. So, you know, he was goofy most of the time, but you can't do the shit he didn't think straight too.
Right.
Exactly. But it goes back to what Bill was saying, you know, you only need one brain in there. One brain could run the show.
That's exactly right. When the puppets are dancing, you only need one puppet master.
Right.
And that's what we all are in the wrestling business, is puppets.
Yep.
And anybody that thinks we're not is fucking fooling themselves. When the booker says jump, you say, how high, sir? Well, you did it to me. If you didn't, you was out the door.
That's the way it goes.
Right.
So, like I said, I don't know what they do today. I don't know how Vince runs his show or whatever, but I went up and talked to him a couple of times. And it's a long story why I never got the job, but that's another story for another day.
Joel, let me ask you, you know, you talked about being in the Southwest Championship Wrestling when Wahoo was booking. How was Wahoo McDaniel as a booker?
Oh, man, Wahoo was, you know, he was just such a, you know, a great babyface, and, and he was from Midland, Texas, out that way. He was, you know, he was real famous in Texas just from when he played ball and everything before he went to go and play pro football. But when he brought us out there, we didn't have no money, or you know, we didn't have nowhere to stay or nothing. So he let us stay in his, me and Hoss Deaton, he let us stay in his little condo, and walked in inside that big old condo he had. And there's a big old 5x5 picture of him and Lee Trevino, Charlie Pride, and Mickey Mantle, you know, with all of their golf clubs in front of them. But,
I'll be right back. Keep talking.
Yeah, it was Wahoo was, man, he worked so hard. There ain't no way in the heck anybody's not going to believe what Wahoo's doing out there. You know, he was just a hard, he was a man's man. He was just a hard-nosed worker. You know, he was a great baby face.
Right. Rod, did you ever have a chance to meet Wahoo McDaniel?
Yeah, I met him. We were doing, Tatum and I were doing shows in around St. Louis. Butch Reed was on there. And Wahoo popped in. I don't know why, but he was there too. Got to meet him. I think Funk was there too. So Funk was with.
All right, we're back.
Bill, let me ask you: did you ever have any run-ins or matches with Wahoo McDaniel?
No, just did jobs for him when he brought him to Australia. But I never Lawler worked with him. I never worked with him in America.
So another thing I wanted to ask you, Bill, and I'll also, Rod, I'll ask you the same thing. How was Jerry Lawler as a booker compared to him as a wrestler, as a worker?
I thought he was very good at what he did in the wrestling business. We had the place going up and down just like everybody else. He booked it sometimes. I booked it sometimes. Jarrett booked it sometimes, and it all stayed the same. The people never knew the change bookers, so we all must have been about the same.
Right.
Lawler was an asset to this business.
Right. Definitely. Did Lawler book at all when you were in USWA Dallas?
He booked, thinking back.
I don't think he did much in Dallas. No, the Von Erichs did all that.
I saw you, Bill, doing TV and all that. That was you, right?
Yeah.
And, I mean, when I ran Memphis for a minute, and I still think Jarrett was booking, and it wasn't Lawler. You know, we do TV. I'm sure everybody helped out on TV, but I think that time Bill was when I was running the roads there. Bill was in charge there. He had the book.
Okay.
Yeah, Jarrett, Lawler, and Dundee just would go round and round. When you'd get tired, you just not booking, that Lawler would book, then he got tired, Jarrett would book, then it would start all over again.
Right. Now let's kind of talk about, I kind of want to go back and, Joel, I'll ask you this, Crockett, you were in Crockett until 87, right?
Yes.
Okay. Was it there you were known as Thunderfoot?
Well, yeah. When I first went in there in 83, I was Joel Deaton. And then about around 85 or the first 86 is when Dusty gave me that gimmick Thunderfoot and JJ as my manager.
And you were – JJ was with you for a little while, right? And then he transitioned over to the Horsemen?
No, he went from me to Buddy Landale.
Right.
Okay.
I think when JJ first came up there, he was managing, Black Bart and Ron Bass, and then they gave them to Paul Jones, and then when me and JJ were done, he went with Buddy, and I think that was right. Let's see, 85 or 86 was right when the Rock and Roll came in, and Bill, you were there too for whatever.
Yeah.
Rock and Roll, Midnight Express, and sellouts everywhere, and you know, the birth of the Four Horsemen, all that stuff was going on, man. The territory pop.
Yeah.
And we were drawing everywhere, but then they started branching out and going all over the country and going head to head with Vince, and that's one of the reasons they lost their territory.
I think so too.
Yeah. Right. So, like, is it safe to say that, like, a territory was good, like, in
their territory. But once you hit like the national expansion, then it's just like, okay, maybe this wasn't a good idea.
Well, it just depended on how well you, your show got over and wherever they were marketed at. Of course, TBS went nationwide, but it just, you know, you just can't get over. You know, it takes a while, you know, especially when you take on the whole country.
Yeah.
And, but Jim Crockett's territory was solid. I mean, they were drawing, they could still be drawing of their, you know, but we all know what happened and, you know, the rest is history. But, you know, I did get to work in there for a little over 6 years and I, you know, and wow, they had some great, great talent, working in there all, through those years.
Right. Bill, you got the Crockett in what, 85, 86?
Yeah. Joe, was you there when I was there? You was there, what?
Yeah, I was there, Bill.
Yeah. Yeah, 85, 86, I was there two years, yeah.
And you were,
yeah.
You did a lot with Jimmy Garvin in that territory, right?
Who?
Didn't you team with Jimmy Garvin in the territory?
Yeah. Yeah, they hooked me up there.
And you guys feuded with Bullet Bob and Brad Armstrong, right?
Yeah.
Talk about, and Bill, I'll throw it to you because I think you would know better. Talk about, like, because... talk about Bullet Bob as a performer.
I thought he was very good, and he was a tough son of a gun. So he could talk, he could wrestle, he'd do it all. So, and then he could kick your ass in a shoot too. So, what more do you want?
Right. Rod, did you get to spend any time around Bullet Bob Armstrong at all?
Yes, I did. I worked some independent shows along the Gulf Coast, and every show Bob was there, and I was going back from Japan, so I had either Japan or Germany, but I had a bunch of anti-inflammatory, and Bob would go, hey, man, I'll trade you this. I was like, Bob, you don't trade me nothing, man. It's my pleasure, and he would always insist on trading me, and I had a good relationship with Bob. Worked with Bob. What a night off. What a professional, man. You guys were awesome. And it was a good time. I mean, I enjoyed every minute of it.
Right. Now, Lucky, I'm going to bring you in here because it's been a while since I've thrown anything to you. Have you had any interaction with any of the Armstrongs over the course of your career?
We did have a show where Bullet Bob and Road Dogg came at the Omen Arena about a year and a half ago. So to that extent, yes, of course, I've met a few of them at various conventions. But within the career mode, one time about a year and a half ago when Bob Armstrong and Road Dogg came to the Omen Arena for one of Bert Prentice's USA Championship Wrestling shows.
So, like, did you have to work with them at all, or
no? They were just there for a meet and greet with people, and were talking to the boys in the locker room, and just kind of there to observe and soak it in and be part of the show.
Okay.
But I've gotten to work with Bill Dundee a lot.
I hear you.
Well, who usually goes over?
The last time, I believe, he took my briefcase away from me and hit me in the head with it, so I still owe him one.
Okay. If we ever get back in the ring, we'll see.
Bring it on.
All right, you heard it. You heard it here, folks. Challenge issued. Challenge accepted. There we go.
Yeah.
He was also my first. Bill was also my first guest on my talk show segment. Shut up, you might learn something.
That is a great name for
say
a talk
that again.
Show.
I said you were my first guest. You and your friend Rex were my first guests on the talk show segment. Shut up, you might learn something, which we had at the Studio 45 in Jackson about 6 months ago.
Now, Bill, I'm going to ask you real quick. Well, not real quick, but the midnight. I want to go back to talking about the Midnight Express. In particular, Bobby Eaton, who you know very well because he is your son-in-law.
Right.
When you guys all went to Mid-South together, was he your son-in-law yet, or did him and your daughter not meet yet?
I think they knew one another, but I don't know how romantic it was then. But so I really don't know. They snuck around for a while before anybody told me that we'd seen one another.
Right.
But you couldn't ask for a nicer guy if she's going to hook up with one of the boys. She hooked up with one of the best ones.
Right.
Yeah.
I always heard how quiet Bobby was. And then,
very quiet.
When he would speak up, it would take everybody by surprise because they're like, all right, something must really be wrong if he's actually upset.
Right.
So you're saying he's quiet like me, right?
Say that again.
I said you're saying he's quiet like me.
I hear you.
Bobby Eaton was actually the special referee for a couple of our matches in Lebanon, Tennessee, within the last couple of years.
Because Bobby's still kind of active today, isn't he?
Yeah, he was not somebody I was going to argue with too much.
Oh, no, he was a lot tougher than he looked.
Right. Rod, did you ever have any interaction with Bobby Eaton?
Yes. Yeah, we worked together in did a spot show in Atlanta, two or three spot shows together. Bobby's great, man. If you can't like Bobby, you can't like anybody.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Like he's legitimately, like we're saying, he's legitimately one of the,
one of the nicer guys.
People,
he's one of those people that, you know, why would you want to piss him off? You just don't know what
he's
capable of doing.
Yeah, there was a story that Jim Cornette told one time about they were having issues with the Freebirds. Hayes and Gordy and Jimmy Garvin, and there was a big locker room fight. It was Hayes, Gordy, and Garvin kind of squaring off with Dr. Death, Steve Williams, and Stan Lane and Cornette, and Bobby was just like, you know what, guys, we're not just here to get you fuckers over. And everybody Terry Gordy was just like, okay, this is like, Bobby's right. This is enough.
Yeah, he didn't say a lot, but usually when he spoke, it made sense.
Right.
You know, you bring up Terry Gordy. I will say this as we continue the circle of life. Terry Gordy's daughter, Miranda Gordy, is one of the stars of USA Championship Wrestling. In fact, she decked me in the face and almost ripped my arm out of its socket last weekend.
Is there anybody that hasn't hit you?
I'm trying to think.
I haven't.
No, not really.
I was just, Rod, you're probably the only one, right?
Joel, have you hit him yet?
No, I haven't had a chance.
All right, we're getting up there, so I'll hold him. You hit him.
I seem to be the most hated guy in the arena. I walk in there, the music hits, and people start chanting, "Don't come out."
Jeez. Yeah, usually when I walk into a room, people start chanting, "Get out." And that's just at home.
So, like, as we continue the discussion about the Southern Territories, a territory we really haven't talked about a lot, and Joel, you said you were there, is the Fuller's Territory.
Yeah, Continental.
Right.
And Billy, you were in Continental, weren't you?
Yeah, I worked for them.
So Joel, let me ask you first: How were the Fullers as bookers?
Well, they had a great little territory, and they did well with it for a long time. And they had some great talent. When Hoss and I, we were leaving Florida. We were leaving Championship Wrestling from Florida down there when we were working down there for Eddie Graham and Dory Jr. was the booker, but Dory got us booked up in Oklahoma for Leroy McGuirk before Watts bought all that out. And so on our way up to Tulsa, we stopped off there in the Continental. And we were there for about 2 weeks. We ran 2 weeks worth of shows with them up there and did some TVs. And then we left and went on up to Tulsa, up there, working Akbar was booking, I think, then. He managed that for a little while. But anyway, but they had, that little, everybody loved working that territory. You know, the shots weren't real long, and it was pretty decent money, and you're home about every night, and they did very well with that territory.
Bill, how was your experience working in Continental?
Oh, I liked it. I got along good with the Fuller, but I knew their dad when he booked Australia back in the 60s, so I knew them when they were little boys, when they were never little. Fuck, they're seven feet tall and that, but when they were younger, let's put it that way. So I enjoyed working for them.
Right. Rod, you were never in Alabama, right? Or were you?
No. I worked, the only shows I did in Alabama were with ECW.
Right. Another subject I wanted to kind of talk about as far as like the territories go are the guys that would go in, just basically do their shot in the territories, whether it be like a 4 week run or a 6 week run, and then move on to the next territory. And the first guy I want to bring up, as far as that goes, is Andre the Giant. And Bill, let's start with you. Did you guys booked Andre in Memphis, correct?
Yeah, we booked him, but it's like, what do you do with the big bastard? I mean, you know what I'm saying? You can't beat him. You can't really get no heat on it. So he just whoops everybody and leaves.
You just book him in battle royals everywhere and let him win.
Yeah, that's the easy way out.
Yeah.
So Lawler never tried to beat him.
Yeah. Okay. No.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you hear the story.
Let me tell you something. Lawler got a lot of the heat for him going over everybody, but that was Jerry Jarrett. He was the boss, and he would tell the guy when he come in, "I'll bring you, but you're putting Lawler over." They knew before they got here.
Right. Yeah, because you
who was going over it in the match.
You hear the stories a lot that like it was always Lawler that said, "All right, well, I gotta,
I got to go over, but you know, it makes more sense that it was Jerry Jarrett that it, obviously, because he was the owner of the territory.
Sure.
Rod, did you ever have the opportunity to meet Andre?
Yeah, I met him. I think he was going over in a battle royal in Japan. we had the night off, and we went to the show, and I got to meet him. Just incredible, man. And he was probably 32, 38 right then. So he was peaking, but I mean, he was so huge. I mean, I'm talking about size, but I'm talking about over with the crowd. I mean,
right.
They loved it. They loved the big monster in Japan, man. Godzilla.
Right.
He was definitely a sight just on television. Like, I was always in awe of him when I was a little kid. I'd see him on TV, and I'd look at the TV, my eyes bugging out of my head because I couldn't believe that they actually made human beings that big. another person that I wanted to talk about that, you know, worked the territories but didn't stay long in any of the territories he was in, Abdullah the Butcher.
Okay.
Bill, do you have a couple of Abdullah stories?
Well, I knew him in Australia too, when Barnett and Mark Lewin brought him to Australia. Then when he came here, I got along good with him, but I didn't have to work with him. So Lawler worked with him when he came in here. But I got all right with him, and he drew money.
Yes, he did draw money. You know, Abby told me that he always would want to go to a territory when the territory was down. So
yeah.
He could go in there and, you know, pop it.
Get it up
help,
and get paid.
Help. That's right, yeah. But that's one
yeah.
of the things, you know, I got to go back over to Japan with him last year. Well, actually, it was in 2019. For a big show they had over there. That's the first time I've been back in 23 years. Man, it was great to go see all those great people over there.
You bet.
Rod, did you ever get a chance to work with Abdullah?
Yes. I worked with him when Gary Hart was running the Metroplex. Abby come in. We didn't work together in Puerto Rico, but he was down there for a moment. He came in on one of the big shows, anniversary shows.
Right. And one of the, you know, you talk about Abby coming in and, you know, popping a territory. One of the biggest feuds I remember him for is the feud with Bruiser Brody. Especially in Dallas. Were any of you guys like around, like in the Dallas territory around the time that feud was going on?
I wasn't. No.
I wasn't either. No. Not out there. No.
Shockingly, I wasn't either.
That's hard to believe, Lucky, because it just seems like, well, you've got to work with just about. Did you ever get to work with Abdullah?
No, I was going to say, he has not hit me yet. He tried to eat me once, but no, he hadn't beaten me up yet.
You ever see Abdullah pull out a fork? Just run. Like,
yeah, he actually carries them to the conventions that he goes to, and he'll take pictures stabbing people in the head.
Just what every parent wants their child to do, take a picture of a guy stabbing their kid in the head. One of my favorite managers of like the territory era, and Ryan, I'm going to start with you because you did spend quite a bit of time with him. Skandor Akbar. I mean, this guy worked, you know, Mid-South, World Class, You know, those are the two places he was the most famous for. Rob, I'll start with you. Like, how, because you got to spend a lot of time with Akbar, do you think Akbar is one of the greatest managers of all time?
I think he should be. I know he's going in the Texas Hall of Fame in Wichita this year, and I think it's overdue. But, you know, there's a lot of guys that are way overdue for Hall of Fame rings. And I could name one, and I think I'm talking to two.
Bill, I think he's talking to you.
My phone went dead. What did he say?
He was trying to give me props saying that you should go into the Hall of Fame.
Oh, I agree with him. Now, I'm going to tell you this, and you're going to get funny, but for an itty-bitty fucker in a big man's business, I did pretty good, wouldn't you say?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I even liked you as Sir William in WCW.
Yeah, that was the manager, Lord Stephen Regal. Yeah.
Hitting people with the umbrella.
Yeah.
See, that's what I learned it from. It's all your fault, Bill. That's why
I hear you. Yeah.
Although I will say, I mean, it's obviously long forgiven now because I grew up. But when I was 7 years old and saw you hit Ricky Steamboat with the umbrella, I was a little upset. But I mean, all is forgiven now, obviously, since we have you on the show. Transitioning back over to Akbar. Skandor Akbar. Bill, did you guys ever book Akbar in Memphis?
No. He may have come in and thought, no, we're just passing through, but no, he was never in here for any length of time.
But you
worked with him when we worked with Bill Watts.
Right?
Yeah, Mid-South. He was a Bill Watts boy. Bill Watts loved Akbar.
Yeah, he definitely, he was a great heel manager. I mean, one of my the earliest memory I can remember actually seeing at that time was when he managed Rod and John Tatum in Global. Of course, he wasn't a general anymore. He was just Mr. Skandor Akbar.
We had a good run. John didn't like to do independent, so if I was home and available, I'd call Ak in advance, say I'm going to be home such and such weeks. You got anything? And he'd book me up. And John didn't want to work, but I sure did. I needed all the work I could get and the money with it.
Right.
If you were married to Missy Hyatt back then, would you want to leave the house?
That is quite cute. Yeah. Oh, Missy.
Before her at the gathering was a highlight.
Now, on the subject, though, of Missy Hyatt, here's another person that has gone from territory to, you know, territory. Obviously, a lot of people remember her for her stint in WCW, but also, and Bill, you could speak to this because you were there, I believe. She was in Mid-South, correct?
Yeah.
And that was around the time where, you know, she was with Tatum, and then she's like, see you later, and then she went to Eddie Gilbert.
Yeah, that was a shoot. one she hooked up with. Didn't they get married?
Her and Eddie,
yeah.
I believe they did, yeah.
Yes, they did.
Now, Rod, I'll ask you, when Eddie came into Global in 91, were him and Missy still together, or was he with Medusa at that time? Or do you not remember?
He was, Missy was gone. Missy was in Atlanta, and Medusa kind of came and went because he was by himself. He was by himself, as I remember.
I'll ask you, Rod, because you were, you know, in Global with the both of them. Was there still like heat between Eddie and John because of Missy in 91, 92?
Well, I'll tell you a little story. Because I was curious myself. I asked John. I said, "Man, you still got heat with Eddie?" And he said, "Man, the only thing I got heat with Eddie for, and I still carry it with me." And I was expecting some big drama. And he told me they were at a hotel somewhere and saw Eddie Gilbert wearing his favorite underwear. So that's when Missy changed teams. So John was a little upset about the underwear. Other than that, I don't think there was much heat.
Well, you know, Bill, were you there when John and Missy came up to Charlotte in 85, 6?
Yeah, I think it was, yeah.
Yeah, they came in, you know, and John was just, you know, he came in. They worked him kind of in the middle, a little underneath and in the middle. But Missy wasn't, I don't know, Missy was just, she did her own thing, you know. You know, I have a few stories went on up there. It was, some of them are kind of funny, but anyway. We'll get into all that now, but I like John. Me and John, I rode with John and Missy. He had a black Eldorado he drove up there in, and we went around that everything, and driving that damn thing everywhere. It's a nice car, but yeah, I like John, man. He was a good dude.
Yeah, I go along good with him too. So I liked him too.
And, Rod, you still talk to him to this day, right?
Yeah, I talk to him about once a week, checking on him. He's going through another divorce, so I keep my hands on his pulse. That's all I'm doing.
Well,
he still live down around where was that down in Florida he lived?
Pensacola. Uh-huh. Yeah, that's when he was running his dad had the fairgrounds, the concession stands, and then John, when he retired, that's what he did.
Yeah, he did pretty well with it too, I think.
Sure did, yes.
We had some fun and funny times up there during that period.
Well, Joel, if you remember back at the gathering in 2019, John Tatum was there with Missy and Dark Journey, and he even did a Q&A.
Yeah, I saw him. I sure did. Stopped talking to him a few minutes. But that was the first time I'd seen Missy or Dark Journey or John in a good long while. Because I was up in Charlotte when Dick Slater brought Dark Journey up, you know, in there. And I hadn't seen her since then, and that was somewhere around in the mid-'80s.
I remember growing up watching Missy feuding with Dark Journey in UWF and Mid-South. And when she hurt her little tum-tum and it was sitting on a pillow, and then she remarkably recovered and hit her with a brick-loaded purse.
But so I'm going to kind of take it around the table here real real quick and ask you guys. And I'll actually start, Rod, I'll start with you. In terms of like overall like career success, is the biggest star you've ever been in a match against?
Wow. Bill Dundee.
Thank you.
Bottom, man. I've got a different level than a fan's level. You know, I'm on the inside. I know these guys. They gave their bodies to me. I gave my body to them. And there's a certain bond of trust and respect that goes with that. And, I could throw some names. I've been in the ring with Rock. You know, that's what you want to hear. But, you know, the people I knew were still running around territories, and you were still looking out for your brother. And, you know, it was a tighter bond than I'm sure they don't have that now. It's clearly missing. But I don't know. I had so much fun. We sold out in Puerto Rico, got the Continental Belt that time, and we had 90,000 fans. So, you know, it just depends on your expectations, I guess, personally.
Right.
Joel, same question. In terms of overall career success, who is the biggest star you've ever been in a match against?
Oh, wow. You know, I was so blessed to have, with my the resume, the guys I got to wrestle, the real pros, but I don't know. I would say the biggest was when I wrestled against Andre the Giant and Antonio Inoki at the start of the tag team tournament over in Japan for All Japan Pro Wrestling in 91. Baba and Andre was, they were a team. And I've said this before, every time I would go out to the ring and have a chance to wrestle Andre, you know, they were always tag teams, but it was almost spiritual because, I mean, here I'm looking across the ring and this man, you know, there might be one in a trillion of how many Andre the Giants do you meet, you know, in your life or giant Babas, you know, it was almost, you know, like spiritual for me, but you know, those were two huge stars. But the biggest card now I ever wrestled on was that show that Leah Mavia, The Rock's grandmother, put on over in Aloha Stadium in Hawaii where they play the Pro Bowl. There were 52 guys and girls on the card. There was, you know, I got a picture of that poster somewhere on my Facebook pages, but there were, you know, 52 people on that card, all the way from Ric Flair to Andre to somebody from every organization on the planet was represented at that show. And I'll put that show up against any WrestleMania. I mean, if you could just see all the star power that was on that card, and I was, you know, there to be able to wrestle there, where they played a Pro Bowl over there in that Aloha Stadium every year. It was just great. And that happened in 1985. And that same year, I went back. That was in August of 85. And that same year, I went back over there again in Honolulu at the Blaisdell and wrestled Andre and Antonio Inoki in a tag match. And I had never met either one of them. Didn't get to talk to them before the matches or anything. You know, just went out there cold. And we had a good, on my page too. I know it's on YouTube, but yeah, Andre the Giant and Antonio Inoki, me and Hoss Deaton worked with them over there in Hawaii. And that was, you know, that was a real thrill for me. And Andre was so generous, and, you know, he really he really, you know, worked with me when he didn't have to, you know, and I was just always grateful for that, for him, and we always got along real good when, you know, we'd be on the same tours in Japan. He was just a great guy. He was a smart guy, too. I mean, he wasn't no dummy. But I don't know. I got to wrestle in a lot of big cards, and I was really blessed, you know, up there in Crockett Land, up there, all those Starcades and the Great American Bashes and all those stadiums and everything. Those were, you know, were real fun to do too. But anyway, I could ramble on and on. I'll let you go to somebody else.
Right. Bill, same question. In terms of career success, who's the biggest star you've ever been in a match against?
Are you talking about working with him, doing a job for him, just getting him over? I mean, there's all kinds of things you do. I work with all the big stars in Australia for 8 or 9 years for Jim Barnett. Never won one match, but we got paid, and that was what it was all about.
Right.
And when we come here, anybody that came through Memphis either worked with Lawler or me, so I don't know. I never saw anybody bigger star than me. I believe in my heart.
Uh-huh.
He may be somewhere else, but he's doing the same thing I'm doing here, so he should be happy to work with me, you know what I mean?
Right.
That's how I saw it.
Exactly.
All right, Lucky, same question.
Well, it's hard to follow up those answers, but I guess, you know, from the very first match I ever had working with my friend, the Colorado kid, Mike Rapata, to getting to work with one of my closest friends, Lanny Poffo, every match for me is WrestleMania because I'm still the 18-year-old kid who loves pro wrestling when I go out there. But if I had to pick one highlight, it would probably be when Missy Hyatt shockingly made out with me in the middle of the ring at the Gathering in
2019. I'll tell you, I had a crush on Missy when I was a kid too. So that would be a dream for me too.
Well, I will tell you this: the end of that match. This is what happened. I had choked Tommy Dreamer earlier in the match. I went to choke Shane Douglas. Missy said, no, let me do it. So I said, all right. Missy went to choke Shane Douglas. Baby Doll came running around the ring. The two of them got into the catfight everyone had wanted to see for years. Their manager, the promoter of the Gathering, Marty D'Amato, pulled Baby Doll off. I pulled Missy off. The two of us turned around, bumped into each other. I went to hit him. He blocked it, hit me. I went to hit him again. He picked up my briefcase. I hit my own briefcase. Then he took my briefcase and decked me. So I'm lying there unconscious. Missy comes running over to me and says, are you all right? That looked really stiff. Are you okay? Say was, I kissed Missy Hyatt. She said, I know, I'm Missy Hyatt. So that's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
Okay, now, we're gonna wrap it up here in a few minutes. Is there anything anybody would like to plug? Bill, is there anything you want to plug?
I'm looking at my book here, and there ain't a damn thing I can see. Oh, yeah, we're working for Burt Prentice at the Omen Arena on Thursday, the 21st of January, for old Burt.
Okay.
I think it's still running. If it's running, it's running Thursday, the 21st. 1st of January.
Right. That's at the small room at Omen, and the big show we've got at Omen is February 6th. That's the one where...
Yeah, I've got that down too. Jackson, February 6th.
That's where we've got Lawler and Brooke Hogan and Jake Roberts and Mike Rotundo and half of Demolition. So, yeah, we're, like I said, Burt Prentice and USA Championship Wrestling are alive and well. And Bill Dundee and Jerry Lawler are often there and a part of it, as is Lucky P. Larson Esquire, where you can find Lucky P. Larson Esquire on Facebook, the Legion of Lucky on Facebook,
the Legion of Lucky YouTube channel. We're all over the place. And so is USA Championship Wrestling on Facebook.
Awesome. So everybody make sure to check those out. Give Lucky a follow. Rod, is there anything you want to plug?
My sponsors are ibuprofen and arthritis cream pain. That's the only thing I'm plugging tonight.
Okay, I hope you're getting paid for that advertisement.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I'm all good, man. It's a pleasure. Thank you for having me. Bill, God bless you, man.
We need to get together, have a beer somewhere.
That sounds like a plan, my friend.
All right, well.
Before you go, Rod, I want to say one thing about something you said earlier, because you were talking about how you were getting paid. And for the first several years of me doing this, when people asked me if I got paid, my response to them was always similar to what you said, and I know you'll appreciate this. I always responded with, more than you realize. Because
that's
the experience, it's the experience, the love. Like I said, every time I go out there, I'm an 18-year-old kid or a 12-year-old kid or whatever it is watching wrestling, and I get to be a part of it now. I love it. And thanks to all the people like you who were there before me.
Well, I appreciate it, man. Thank you, guys. Joe, I love you, brother. You take care of yourself. Still praying for you, man.
Thank you, Rod. I love you, brother.
And take care, and we'll have that beer, man.
Oh, sounds good, my friend. You guys take care.
All right.
Thank you.
You too.
Okay,
Rod,
you too.
Rod, thanks a lot for being on, and we'll talk to you soon. All right.
Thank you.
Joel, is there anything you would like to plug?
The Legend Selection in Tampa, Florida, February 26th this year. They're going to recognize me for something there, and it'd be a real honor. But other than that, thank you guys for having me on and that.
All right, Joe, you take care.
Huh?
Yeah.
Be well.
Take care.
Okay, Bill, you too, man. Good talking to you. It's been too long.
All right, I hear you.
All right, yeah, Joel, thank you so much for coming on. Can't wait to have you on again.
All right, just let me know. I'd love to.
All right, cool. Thank you very much, sir. Right.
Good night. Right. Good night, guys.
All right, good night.
Good night.
Why is it not surprising, Bill, that it comes down to you and me? You never offered to buy me a beer.
Well, we're not done talking yet.
Not done fighting, not done anything yet, Bill.
I hear you.
All right, but kind of in closing here, for this discussion on the Southern Territory, I think everybody can agree. I mean, obviously now with USA Championship Wrestling, you know, the territories are still alive in some shape, form, or fashion. We can thank Lucky and Bill for that because they help keep, you know, that alive. Every time Lucky gets hit in the head with a briefcase, you know, it's another victory.
It does seem to get a pop, and everyone from the Moondog to Miranda Gordy has decked me. So, and I've gone up against Jerry Lawler about 50 times. You want to guess how many times my guys have won? That's about it.
Two.
You would be too high.
I actually did
win one night, one time, when Tommy Rich beat him. But that was because Matt Riviera interfered, and the next day on TV, Bert Prentice reversed it. So for one day, I did have a win over Jerry Lawler. I've even had two matches with Jerry Lawler. They don't last very long, usually, though.
Jeez. But I want to thank you, Bill, and thank you, Lucky, for being on the show. This is a very tremendous discussion about the Southern Territories. Definitely, I love the territories, even though
by the time I was born, they were already, you know, just about gone.
Yeah.
But I love reading about the territories. I love watching old territory footage. And you guys have provided a lot of insight to the subject, and we appreciate it. And I would love to have you, I would love to have both of you on again sometime soon.
All right. Just
there's very
my
little,
number and give me
there's
a call.
Very little I like. Yeah, there's very little I like more than talking about wrestling, so.
Yeah.
I
so
hear you.
Definitely. You guys are, just like Rod, just like Joel, you guys are more than welcome to come on anytime. So.
All right. Well, just holler at me when you want me back.
Awesome.
All right.
I appreciate it. Thank you very much, guys.
All right. Enjoyed it. Thank you.
No problem. All right, have a good night. All right, Eric, Stevie, is there anything you guys wanted to touch on real quick before we get out of here?
No. Not really.
Okay. All right, this has been the Southern Territories Roundtable. Thank you so much, Lucky P. Larson, Joel Deaton, Superstar Bill Dundee, Rugged Rod Price, California Stud. Appreciate having all you guys on. It's been a blast. So join us. Obviously, we will be back next week, same time, 6:30 p.m. Eastern time here on blogtalkradio.com/everythingunscripted, and we'll see everybody next Friday night.
Yep. All right, y'all. Take care.
Later, everybody.
All right.